Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Pepper, do you see birds?
Every morning, I wake up in my 100-year-old Chicago apartment to the sounds of my cat eagerly meowing at her perch by the window. Our version of Bird TV never fails to give us glimpses of the latest hot seasonal bird in town. Yet there's one fowl that fails to answer the call of the seasons: pigeons. This had me thinking. With my apartment being so old, are these perennial city birds outside my window because they once were famed mail carriers or someone's pet?
Everything that those birds are, where they are, why they are, is because of us.
As spring approaches with its migratory birds, what role does the feral pigeon play in our ecosystem? And what other birds call this land home? I'm your host, Ariel Ravenay. And today, we look up to the sky to see why so many birds come through our city, what conservation efforts are in place to support them, and how it all begins and ends with pigeons. Grab your binoculars, and let's get looped in, Chicago. City birds, pigeons, rats with wings, whatever you call them, their coos and presence is well known. But did you know that this familiar bird is actually a species of dove?
In their native land, they're called rock doves. So when you see rock doves here in the United States, they're always in the city. And if you see them outside of the city, it's usually associated with a farm or an area where there's a lot of people.
That's Tim Snyder, VP of Zoological Operations and Programs at the Brookfield Zoo. He told me that this species is not actually native to this area, or America at all. Many see these birds as a nuisance today, but the truth is, before they were feral, they were friends. The modern term for the rock dove in the U.S. is feral pigeon, not wild, because they were brought over by European colonists, who bred them to be domesticated long before coming to the New World. They were brought here as pets, and were used to deliver mail for centuries. As homing pigeons, or messenger pigeons, these birds could fly 25 miles in 25 minutes to deliver mail, carrying up to 2.5 ounces on their back. They were used by news reporters and in war, but modern technology replaced the pigeons' duties sometime around 1950. Some of the original rock doves brought by settlers escaped and had established feral populations. So by the time they were fired from their post, the feral pigeon was already here to stay.
The food sources that they're used to having are not reliable here in North America. So they're relying on us feeding them or whatever we discard, that's what they're feeding on. Around farms, where you'll sometimes see them around large farms, they're actually eating spilled grain. When we have the large cornfields and stuff, that food isn't available all year round. So that's not there to support them year round. So the only reason they're still in existence in the numbers they are is because of us.
So the feral pigeon doesn't migrate because they aren't native to this land and need to be close to humans to survive. But they actually aren't the first pigeons to live in the Midwest. If we went back 150 years, you would see an indigenous species claiming the skies. The passenger pigeon.
It's hard to imagine this, but passenger pigeons probably made up about between 20 and 40% of all birds in North America. There was anywhere from 3 to 5 billion passenger pigeons. And their roosting sites, they have found their roosting sites, some of the larger ones, were 100 square miles of solid pigeons in all the trees.
The name passenger pigeon is easy to confuse with carrier pigeon, but this species was never domesticated to be used for anything specific. The passenger pigeon got its name from the French word passager, meaning passing by, inspired from their habits of traveling fast in large flocks that were hard to miss. There are even accounts from early colonial settlers that the sight of them made some townspeople drop to their knees and pray in terror as a large flock would block out the sky. But their fear didn't last long. Eventually, the settlers saw an opportunity in their large numbers.
The thought is that they went extinct because of hunting and habitat destruction. As the cities grew and there was a larger call for lumber, the forests were being cut down. And then also there was a drastic increase in hunting of the pigeons. When you think of the large numbers of pigeons that were actually slaughtered to take to market, it's just amazing. And they would gather, you know, tens of thousands of them. When you have a flock that's a mile wide and goes on for like 20 or 30 miles, the hunters were shooting up into the air and birds were just falling out of the air, and they would just throw them all into barrels and send the barrels into the cities to be sold.
As trade through trains grew and forests were cut into farmland, the passenger pigeon's population dwindled fast. The last one, a female named Martha, died in 1914 at the age of 29 in the Cincinnati Zoo. And with them gone, people began to see the role they had played. And we still do, 110 years later.
You know, when you think of a pigeon, you think, oh, they're going to eat grain, they're going to eat corn. But no, these guys ate acorns and chestnuts, big fruit. And when all those birds went away, it was a whole change to the environment. Because now all of a sudden there was this massive quantity of chestnuts and acorns and beechnuts available, which saw an increase in the rodents that live there. And one of the things that they hypothesize about is that the increase in Lyme's disease is due to the increase in the mouse population that's eating the acorns and the other nuts. So that without that pigeon there to eat that food supply, we've actually possibly had a negative effect on our environment.
Martha and her species didn't die fully in vain, though. Their extinction helped inspire the first bird conservation laws in the United States.
When you take a species that was that prolific, had that big of a number, and then in a very short period of time, it goes from billions of them down to the last one in just a couple of decades, that kind of opened everybody's eyes and said, you know, hey, we've got to do something about this. Because as people looked around, they saw that, you know, not only this really prolific species disappeared, but they were seeing other species doing the same thing. Shortly after that was when the Migratory Bird Act went through, which was an agreement with Canada, Mexico, and the United States made an agreement to protect native birds. Okay, I'm going to try and turn my computer here.
Oh, great.
I don't know if you see it over my shoulder there.
Oh, yeah. Is that a passenger pigeon?
Yes, it is.
They're so beautiful.
And they are. And the reason it's here is It was a specimen that was taxidermied. And we keep it here in the Animal Care and Programs offices as a reminder of what could happen if we don't do our job with connecting people with animals and nature.
Illinoisans have come a long way since the extinction of the passenger pigeon. Today, there are multiple conservation organizations and habitat restoration projects in effect. I spoke with the president of the Chicago Ornithological Society, Edward Warden, about some of the current efforts in place.
The most fundamental thing is ensuring that there is sufficient habitat. At the end of the day, the biggest culprit for the vast majority of species that are in some way declining or threatened or endangered is a loss of habitat. And again, that takes on different forms, but making basically sure that at least here in Chicago, the kinds of habitats we get, we're conserving as much of it as possible. So, you know, in the case of the plovers, you know, that's beach space, that's dune land habitats, and making sure that we're carving out spaces for them. So Montrose, where our famous ones were messing, is a great example of this massive beach. It's one of the most popular in the city. It's huge, but carving out a small section on the southeast end of it to allow for some of that habitat to return and regrow. And, you know, it's been a long road, because once you lose something, it's a lot easier to lose a bird or a species and kick them out of a space than it is to bring them back.
Edward mentioned Montrose Point Bird Sanctuary in Lincoln Park, a protected nature area dedicated to local and migratory birds. And it truly is just that, a sanctuary. When you walk through the wooden gates into the park, it feels like you're entering a place that belongs to the birds. So I took a walk through it to chat with birdwatchers to see who's in season.
During migration, it's really just, you have no idea what you're going to find day to day. I'm a printmaker, but I so a lot of indoor stuff. So when it's nice, this is an excuse to spend some time outside and also be around a lot of different types of animals, including the red-winged blackbirds, who are here early this year.
That's Matt, a Chicago native and amateur bird watcher. He, like many bird lovers, frequents the sanctuary to get a glimpse of the seasonal birds and to visit his favorite pair of cardinals.
There's a male and female pair that I kind of like. I like to visit. I can usually find them pretty easily, and I know that I can tell who they are just from the kind of, it's a bit of a, like a little bit of a game to see, like, is this really, is that them? Is that the one? Is that my, are these my little buddies or not? It's kind of silly, but it's also, you know, it's my own kind of bird watching, and I'm learning more and more.
Montrose Point is known internationally as a great place to bird watch. And I actually ran into a man named Dylan, who made sure to stop at the park before returning home to Tennessee.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure these are two white-breasted nuthatches right here.
Oh, wow.
And there are some awesome ducks in the water there, some lesser scop, and red-breasted mergansers, and lots of cool stuff.
I know that you've mentioned, you know, you birdwatch in Tennessee, and you're coming here to birdwatch. What are some tips for people if they want to, like, kind of start birdwatching?
I feel like the best times when I'm birdwatching are when I can really, like, lower my frequency to kind of tune out all of the things that I'm thinking about. Most people, I feel like, have very active minds. But when you can just shut that down a little bit, you start to see small movements in the branches, and then you look for it and you follow it, or you can hear something and you turn your head that way. So I feel like trying to come to the level of the birds, you can walk through this whole park and not see a single bird, even though they're all around you. But if you take a second to, like, calm yourself and center yourself, then, like, this whole world opens up for you.
Whether it's an endangered bird or migratory ones, Chicagoland sees a lot of them. I asked Ed why that is.
There's two parts of it. There's the major flyways that come through here. So we have birds that are migrating both on their way north and south, depending on the season, that pretty much get funneled right through, whether that's through via the Mississippi River or Lake Michigan, funneled right through our area. And so we often have a much higher density, both in terms of number of species, but also just sheer volume of birds passing through our area than many other places in the country or North America. The other part of it, too, is that we're also an incredibly biodiverse region of the country, one of the most. And we have a ton of different habitats and ecosystems that are here. So it's not just the migrants passing through, but it's the birds that actually do live here during the spring, summer, winter, fall, that also make up a huge portion of the amazing diversity of birds we can see. So in any given year, you can see upwards of 200 different species of birds.
With all these strides made, is it safe to say these animals are free from danger? Well, when we come back from the break, we'll learn why Chicago is the bird murder capital of the country. Stay tuned.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
The Chicago skyline. Beautiful, unique, grand, and deadly. From late February to April marks migration season, when uncountable varieties of birds return north. With such large flocks coming in, many will fall victim to the sky-reflective windows.
We do know it's in the millions every year, and that's not just overall, that's in Chicago. It's a very dramatic number. It varies, and we'll never know exactly what the number is, but we do have a lot of evidence and data over decades at this point to say with confidence it's a huge issue. And if you look at the issue across the U.S., it gets much, much higher. There's some research a couple years ago that came out of Cornell Lab of Ornithology that basically ranked Chicago as the worst city for migratory bird collisions. And that goes back to that earlier point we were making about how lucky we are that we're kind of on this flyway. Birds tend to get funneled through our area. Well, the kind of flip side of that coin is that that also means that there's that many more birds funneling through this area, potentially facing the hazards that we have erected in this space. So unfortunately, it is a very big issue and one that affects the entire city, from your three-story neighborhood shop or apartment complex to your lakefront skyscraper.
While a majority of these collisions happen during migration season, it's still an issue all year round. The problem is that birds can't perceive glass the way humans can, especially when we have so many buildings and windows that are made to reflect the sky. So birds might see a window as a space they can travel through. And when flight requires such speed and momentum, the results are often deadly. The problem is so pervasive that Chicago Bird Collision Monitors was created to collect the dead birds for scientific research and rehabilitate the injured ones. Ed and his team at the Ornithological Society have teamed up with them, as well as the Chicago Bird Alliance, to form the group Bird Friendly Chicago. Their goal is to work with the city to fix this problem.
Over the last 8 years or so, we've been working together to basically push policies that try to get buildings to incorporate bird-friendly practices in their buildings. And thankfully, there's a lot of different ways you can do that. So one of the big things that we had been pushing for years was the passage of an ordinance that would basically mandate that new construction follow certain guidelines and standards to meet a level of being bird-friendly. More recently, we've been working with the Department of Planning to put together, basically in addition to the city's sustainability policy, that would allow for bird-friendly design to become basically a part of the menu of the sustainable design policies and give, again, developers options on what they want to pursue. So for the last couple of years, we've been working trying to get that in place, but it has yet to be instituted. And in the meantime, new buildings have gone up.
How buildings can retroactively make a window bird friendly is simple. Stickers. Basically, the goal is to get some kind of pattern on the window to show birds that there is something there. And a common way to do that is having stickers go across the whole window like a net. But with new technology, there are ways to be proactive.
First of all, I want to just address to the people who give us the guff about, oh, well, it doesn't look great to put stickers on my glass. Well, it also doesn't look great to see bodies on your doorstep. So there's that. But the simple truth is that the best time to make your building bird friendly is before it ever even goes up. And so if you're thinking about those things before in the design phases, before anything even is laid on the ground, that is going to be the easiest thing in the long run. There are tons and tons of glass makers that produce glasses that are, in simple terms, they are reflective in a way that birds perceive them as solid, but it doesn't affect our vision through the windows at all. If you are going out of your way to incorporate that glass as part of your building design, then it's no different than just building your building as you would with traditional glass.
Though the windows of buildings pose a dangerous threat, it's in big part thanks to these buildings that Chicago's official bird, the peregrine falcon, was able to be rehabilitated. And 2024 doesn't just mark the 110th anniversary of the extinction of the passenger pigeon. It's also the 25th anniversary of the peregrine falcon being elected the city's official bird, an honor bestowed upon a species brought back from near extinction.
The short version is that the Department of Environment, they wanted to run a competition to have the city designate an official bird. This coincided with a lot of things that were happening with peregrine falcon conservation. At that point, the peregrine falcon had actually just been delisted from the Endangered Species Act, had already undergone a very successful conservation story. And part of that conservation story was based in Chicago decades before that, when scientists were looking at trying to reestablish the species, which primarily is a cliff-dwelling species. They were looking at places, well, where do we put these birds? We've got them to successfully breed in captivity. We want to reintroduce them to the wild. Where do we go? And somebody had the bright idea, well, buildings kind of work like cliff faces. And Chicago was one of the first major cities where peregrine falcons were reintroduced to get them to nest and breed in cities. And it was wildly successful. And so when this competition came around and the Department of Environment wanted to declare the official city bird, it just kind of made sense. Now, there was a full election that was turned over to the people to vote. There was some 40,000 ballots cast. And when it was all counted up and told, peregrine emerged victorious.
So while Chicago may have the highest number of bird collisions in the country for now, Ed says the city is also responsible for some of the best conservation efforts in the nation.
Chicago deserves a lot of credit for recently, but also over many years, really pushing the boundaries of what nature and restoring nature could and should look like. We have a very long legacy, actually, in this city of individuals who have broken the mold and really questioned basically what kind of traditional structures are there we're operating under and how can we break that open to be more inclusive of what nature means and how we can successfully save species. And it's all about basically looking at the space not as some narrow description of what we think it should be, but on what can this be and how can we incorporate and give wildlife a space to live alongside us. And the peregrines are just a great example of that. We have these cliffs already existing. We have these birds that we need to expand. We have a plenty of food source in the form of pigeons and other migratory birds that come through. Let's try it and see what happens. And it worked. For peregrine falcons in particular, there are now more in Illinois and Chicagoland than we believe there were even before.
Our story began with the extinction of a native species whose death prompted conservation efforts. That law went on to save a different one. And though a major part of the peregrine's reestablishment is thanks to buildings, it's also in part thanks to a food source that isn't native to Chicago at all, the feral pigeon. I told you this tale would begin and end with pigeons. With all of the dislike society has for the feral pigeon, I had to know, from the point of view of a native bird conservationist, is their role in the ecosystem bad?
Everything that those birds are,
where they are, why they are, is because of us. So really, at the end of the day, it's a story of us and how they have become what they are. Pigeons as a species are, you know, as far as we can tell at this point, after decades and decades of data and research, are really not a detrimental species. They're not hurting other birds. They're not really hurting other wildlife. And, you know, the reality is that we have kind of allowed them, or maybe deliberately in many cases, branded them as these ugly things. They're basically rats with wings. I've heard them described many times. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you look at these birds, just even for more than a second, you recognize there's a ton of beauty, variety, color variation, and patterns. They're a fascinating species. Really, there's just a case to be made that all of this adds up to the fact that they're just really good at what they do. They're a highly successful species. The fact that they're managing to carve out a living in pretty much every urban area on the planet, living alongside with humans, able to survive and thrive and succeed, even after we've reintroduced peregrine falcons, right? Like, these birds are survivors. They're adaptable. And, you know, whether you like them or not, they deserve credit for that.
This episode is dedicated to Martha and the rest of the passenger pigeons we let go extinct. Thanks for listening to this episode of Looped in Chicago. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Ariel Ravine, edited by Jim Hinke, Cooper Mall, and myself. Craig Schwalb is our station's news director. Myron Kaplan is managing producer of National News Podcasts. To see photos of native birds and an exclusive interview with a city pigeon, check out our station's socials on Instagram at WBBM News Radio or on TikTok at WBBM News Radio 105.9. We'll get you looped in back here in 2 weeks. See you then.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.